You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Friday, 22nd of October. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Alex Dayson from Bull Wealth, took this clicks results, Pick and Pay versus ShopRite. Also chatting with Adrian Seville. I want to touch inflation, but I want to dig into things such as inflation expectations. How does it become structural? Not where are we now, but what are the processes? We spoke to him last year about deflation, now we're on the other side of the coin. And then I got new Satrix All-Share ETF coming out next month. I got some thoughts on that. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Sale of non-core asset in its Omnia, more than R1 billion. Special dividend almost certainly coming from that. Business Day, steel strike ends with NUMSA signing a deal for sake of workers, agreeing to that 6% pay increase. Morning markets are mostly green. We've got the US S&P up a third, NASDAQ up 0.2%. In Asia, Sydney's up a couple of points, 0.03%. Turkey up 0.2%. Commodities are mostly green. Gold, 17.89. Brent, a little weaker, 84.15 a barrel. Rand, about 20 cents weaker at 14.66. Top 40 opening call, green about 90 points higher. That's 0.15%. That as Tencent is trading up 1.1% in the lunch break in Hong Kong.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Alex Dace from Bull Wealth. Alex, appreciate your time this morning. Clicks results out yesterday. I think by many metrics, perhaps their toughest set of numbers. I mean, group turnover was up 10.2%. HEPS up only 2.6, although a fair impact from the writing in July would have been 8.8% without that. Decent dividend coming through, a lot of cash. Your take on Clicks, the results and valuations taking this into account?
Good morning, Simon. Yes, for Clicks, so this is probably the most complex set of results I can ever recall for Clicks. It's usually as clean as you can get. But due to diluting once-off costs and insurance payments received and so forth, it does have quite an impact on the results. And also the ability to trade in the near future post the riots in July. So certainly that had a big impact on the group. By saying that, they generate excellent cash flows. Most likely not sustainable due to very strong working capital, but still very, very good cash flows. And ROEs are still almost best in class, around 40%, and they do anticipate to be even higher in the future. Good dividend. They paid out as well as share buybacks. So basically all the free cash flow is paid out. But saying all of that, the problem with Clicks, and it's been for a number of years, is the valuation is very excessive. It's comparable to some quality global companies. I mean, like a Facebook and so forth. Yet it's based in South Africa, much lower growth rates and probably more risk. So that is the big issue with it. Foreign investors love Clicks. They're about 7% of the shareholders, and they look at the actual growth story and as well as the ROEs and believe it's a premium stock. So yeah, always good results, but very touchy even on the valuation side of things.
Yeah, I mean, always an expensive stock. And as you point, I mean, it, you know, don't quality management, but you really pay up for it. Is it then, I mean, a lot of folks will say, well, Clicks versus Dis-Chem. Dis-Chem, I mean, maybe the quality isn't quite there, but certainly a better valuation. Or do you look at Dis-Chem as a completely different beast and perhaps not as attractive?
Yeah, look, Dis-Chem also got very good growth prospects. So that's had some scores of own goals from a corporate governance perspective in the past, which did eke some institutional investors. But it seemed to be looking to get that into place. Also, the distribution business is not to the same scale yet as a Clicks, and you know, if you go, and they perhaps more work is required there. So it's not exactly the same level. But the overall operating performance of Dis-Chem, it's a good solid business. They're rolling out into smaller format stores. It will certainly grow a lot from these levels. But once again, valuation is a bit on the high side as the markets are really anticipating that growth to come through.
Yeah, and back to that valuation issue. I want to jump back slightly earlier in the week. We saw the pick and pay numbers out, and those were massively complex. I mean, we had, base effects of, huge stockpiling in the previous year, but then, tobacco and alcohol sales. We had the violence in July. Comparing pick and pay to ShopRite, is there a clear winner? Is there a valuation issue again where valuations are a little stretched?
Look, there's no doubt that ShopRite is far superior when it comes from an operational perspective. I mean, they're already running at full cylinders. There's not much inefficiency still in the business. Case of Pick and Pay, certainly at the mid-side, Pick and Pay corporate stores are really still struggling, and they really need to fix that. But if you look at their focus, it does seem to be more on the low LSM now. So certainly Boxer is an area looking to grow very, very excessively. And that's quite interesting because if you look at ShopRite's numbers in more detail, specifically the ShopRite brand itself, as well as USafe, they actually haven't been growing that impressively over the last decade, specifically ShopRite. So perhaps means that either that market is struggling, or secondly, ShopRite is already gaining market share in that area. So it's interesting to see that they are looking to double down on the lower end, because that's a very competitive market, people struggling and so forth. And you also tend to be more of commodity-based products, which you can't really push prices too high, etc. So let's see if they are successful there, Pick and Pay, but they need to fix the mid-side of the business, which is traditional Pick and Pay, in order to really compete with ShopRite.
Yeah, I hear you on that. ShopRite, the beast in the room, and you really get to that. Some production updates coming through yesterday. Commodities being under some pressure. Commodity stocks being under pressure. How are you looking at our resource sector at this moment? Is there valuations there, or is the cycle that we've seen starting to fade and perhaps a little bit risky?
Yeah, so I think the one problem we've seen in the resource sector over the last few months is that the production numbers are starting to disappoint. I mean, across the board, there's been some poor results from the golds, the platinums, and now we also saw from Sasol yesterday, also not a great update. So that's one issue. And then secondly, this is quite big uncertainty regarding the actual commodity prices outlook. So that's having a bit of impact on the share prices, causing it to be volatile. But saying that, if prices can hold at these levels, then most of these stocks are still very attractive from a spot-based earnings perspective. The balance sheets have degeared, and you could expect them very strong dividends. But you need commodity prices to hold relatively to these levels. If it does pull back, 20, 30, 50%, share prices will follow.
Yeah, I take a point on that. It's going to be those commodity prices. Watch those. We've seen a bit of a bounce, but there's still some risks there. We need those prices to hold to justify those current valuations. Alex Dace from Thimble Wealth, always appreciate the early morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting now with Dr. Adrian Saville, General Capital. Adrian, appreciate the early morning. We chatted last year, about mid-year or so, we were chatting around deflation, and you told me I might have to have salary cuts, which still gives me some sleepless nights. We're now almost on the other side of the coin, and I wanted, before we sort of get to the mechanics of it, how important is inflation expectations? When we were talking deflation, part of the trick is that if I think something's cheaper in a year, I delay buying it. In an inflation environment, I imagine if I think something is more expensive in a year, do I rush out and sort of buy my big ticket items? And this kind of feeds into that inflation cycle.
Simon, exactly. The expectations component is a critical aspect because it institutionalizes, it bakes into the inflation arrangement what people think inflation is going to look like some period from now, 6 months, 12 months from now. And if I think inflation, if at the moment it's 5% and I think it's going to be 10%, then when I am contemplating wage negotiations, pricing arrangements. I'm going to set my wage expectation in anticipation of that inflation. So expectations, what you think is coming down the line, is very often more important than what you're seeing in the inflation print. So at this point, I think really needs to be emphasized that, you know, people are forward looking and they do anticipate what's coming. And this is a key part of understanding inflation risk and the inflation environment.
Yeah, and I mean, economics so much is people, and people at an individual level are relatively smart. I mean, they can look out the window and say that's going to be more expensive. Well, what about scenarios? I mean, the Social Security in the US, their cost of living increase, it's going to be 5.9% when it kicks in next year, which is the highest number in 40 years. That must also lead to, A, people feeling richer, so maybe a little bit more sort of, I don't know, keen to go out there and spend. But if I got 5.9 this year, my expectation for the next year is also going to be higher, and again that just sort of feeds into it. So it's both the sort of expectation of what my salary increase will be, but then when I get it, that feeds that loop.
Yeah, and in the world of finance and economics, the behavior here that we talk about is an attribute called anchoring, that your or a recency bias, that what has happened most recently is what you might anticipate to happen next. So, amongst other things, you've got the expectation taking you higher, and then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, and it's just a self-fueling mechanism that the expectation of higher inflation actually causes higher inflation. Just to, you know, rewind to your earlier points about, you know, if you think prices are rising, will you rush out and buy stuff? Theoretically, yes. And if everyone does it at the same time, then it's a bit like a run on the bank. If we all rush to the store in the same moment, expecting that the prices of food, cards, clothes is going to be higher or meaningfully higher later, we should buy it now, then we're going to boost demand artificially, and that will cause prices to go higher. So there's so much in here that is about the way in which people behave in anticipation of, and that expectations component then is absolutely critical.
Yeah, we essentially pull forward next year's shopping into this year, and as you say, that then boosts this year's demand, and then we get inflation. So then I look at look at the US at this point. You know, in April we were 4.2. I mean, if you go back to October, we were 1.2%. Well, they were. They hit 4% in April. They've been above 5% since June. I mean, they've had 5 months of a plus 5% inflation. Do we start to worry that this starts to get baked into the system?
Well, the language that's being thrown around in policy circles is that this is transitory, and the I think the reason why this word is being used so much, you know, with such frequency and emphasis, is because if we can get people to expect that this inflation is exactly that it's transitory, then They'll let it go. They'll let this one go. It's like, yeah, it's 5%, but it's passing. Remember the 2 or the 3%. So the emphasis on transitory is to try and insist that although you're seeing 5% now, this will pass, relax. You know, it's soon going to be over. You make the point that we're now starting to see, a regularity of the 5%, and if that's the case, then people will quickly be drawn out of the belief that this is transitory, and they'll start to change their belief based on the experience that, hang on, you know, this isn't so transitory. It most certainly is 5, and it's sticking around. And then the flywheel of inflation is kicked in.
But I take your point on that, because I've always noticed our governor locally, he always refers to 4.5%. He never gives the 3-6%. He says 4.5%. And I've always figured, because he doesn't even want to mention 6%, he wants that not even on the table. Just don't even talk about it. Have that 4.5. He's setting expectation. I hadn't realized that's exactly what Jerome Powell is doing by saying transitory. He's not doing a number, but he's using that language to try and not hoodwink, but to try and calm the population.
Yeah, and it's to persuade us, and not, you know, that's not meant in a negative or deceitful way, but, you know, persuade us in our expectations that this is what the environment is like. And so in South Africa domestically, you're absolutely right. Let's not talk about 3-6, because people will fear the worst 6. Mm-hmm. They'll set their plans on that basis, or they'll set their negotiations or pricing arrangements on that basis. And similarly, in the conversations going on in the US in particular, this is transitory. You know, let's not talk about the 5. Let's instead just agree that this too shall pass.
So you're calling, I mean, is this U.S. inflation in transitory? Is it going to come through? I mean, we've got, I mentioned the Social Security cost of living increases. We've got oil at multi-year highs, both West Texas and Brent feeding into it. We've certainly got staffing challenges in the U.S., which one way you resolve that is higher salaries and the like. Do you think, in a year's time we'll be talking about that transitory phrase, or in a year's time are we talking about structurally higher inflation? Maybe not 5, but sort of a 3.5 or a 4.
Why not 5? Because there's so many things in the system that point to higher rather than lower inflation. Mm-hmm. And here's an economist about to make a forecast, so let's meet in a year and we can talk about how wrong I am. But there's a couple of things that sit in the system that preload us for higher inflation. Amongst others, the abundant printing of money, and low interest rates, springloads the system for inflation. The second is supply side constraints, and microprocessor shortages is just an example.
Yeah.
Constraints in supply chains, in ports, in logistics, in transit, all of that is feeding the inflation system. Energy sits in the supply chain. Beginning of the year, oil is $40 a barrel. It's now, 80 plus. Mm-hmm. And then you've got demand side factors, which include, you've referenced already the social wage program, which has encouraged spending or has helped spending, perhaps is better, helps rather than encouraged. So you've got supply, you've got demand, and you've got the money system all indicating higher, not lower prices.
Yeah, and hence, why not 5? I take your point in that. A little spooky, but why not 5? We'll leave it there. Dr. Adrian Saville, always appreciate the time, always come away smarter. Genera Capital.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com. or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Satrix is launching a new ETF. It's going to be covering the all-share index, the JSE all-share index. And folks have been asking me about it left, right, and centre. In details, it's currently in IPO. It lists on 10 November. Total expense ratio will be 0.25%. But only in June next year, Satrix will waive that until such point and quarterly dividends. The exciting, what's getting folks excited is that it includes some small and mid-caps. Although, let's be real, the small caps are sort of down as maybe a small small as 3 billion. They're not sort of tiny, tiny caps. But here's the thing on the Orshare, is if you look at the Orshare index versus the top 40, which is our sort of big cap index, they pretty much move in sync. And it's the same with the Dow Jones and the S&P 500 in the US. Fundamentally different. But if I look at a chart over the last decade, the Orshare has done 167%, and that's a total return. The top 40, 164. So the difference is really absolutely minute. That's it for today. I polled today, chatting with Adrian Seville about inflation. And I mean, I always, whenever I chat with Adrian, I come away smarter. The Jerome Powell using the transfer word. I mean, I get what he's doing there. I suppose the question is, are you worried about inflation rising into the new year? I mean, my answer when I woke up this morning was, nah, not too much. I chat with Adrian and suddenly I'm a whole bunch more worried about it. You can have your vote. You can have your say on our LinkedIn and Twitter profiles at MoneyWeb. Yesterday we were asking if you'd bought a new car, and those who had bought, we asked if you'd bought new or second hand. 55% of you bought a second hand, 45% of you bought a new car. And I wonder if it had perhaps been the other way around, if you'd been able to find cars to buy in the new space. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast available just after 7. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie, Nabuchle, Nicole, Eleanor, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.